Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. We've been facing two harmful algal blooms here in southwest Florida. The red tide bloom, which stretches from Naples to Sarasota, has been impacting coastal waters since last fall. And the toxic blue-green algae bloom that started in Lake Okeechobee and has worked its way down the Caloosahatchee River and into the estuary. Now, scientists say there's a third kind of algae showing up around where the two meet called Oscillatoria. And while apparently not toxic to humans, it's not great news for the environment. For the rest of the hour, we're going to get the basics on this algae and what its environmental implications are. I'm joined by Dr. Michael Parsons. He's FGCU Professor of Marine Science and Director of the Coastal Watershed Institute and Vestor Field Station. Dr. Parsons, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay, so what is Oscillatoria algae, and am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes. So Oscillatoria is a kind of blue-green algae, a kind of cyanobacteria, similar to Microcystis, in that it's a cyanobacteria, but it's different.
Okay.
So it'll form long filaments, basically strings. You can almost think of it as a stack of poker chips.
Oscillatoria is a genus, not a species. Is there a variation between the different kinds? Is the kind that we have here a common kind? Do you know that?
I'm not sure which species we have blooming here right now, but there are many species of Oscillatoria.
Do they all behave Do they behave basically the same? And what I'm trying to get to is the toxicity to humans. Are they all not toxic to humans? Seemed like there was some question about that when I was reading up on it.
There are some that produce toxins.
Okay.
So some will produce microcystins like Microcystis does, and then some other ones will produce other known toxins.
So what do we need to do to determine whether the ones that are forming off our coast are the kinds that produce toxins?
We would need to collect them and basically run the toxin tests for the toxins that we are assuming that it could have. There's always a chance that it may have a toxin that we do not normally test for, but I think we have a pretty good idea on the toxic Oscillatoria, so we would know which test to use.
Gotcha. So describe it. Like, what does it look like, and you know, what are people going to see if they see it, and is it being fueled by the dead fish, the dead marine life? That's what the news reports that I've read have said anyway.
Right. So when you see Oscillatoria, it's microscopic, so it's going to be a microscopic string basically, but it can clump and then form mats. And so when I was on the water last week, you could see these kind of green and brown mats, almost clumps, if you will, floating on the surface. And so some Oscillatoria species, many of them, in fact, they live on the bottom, so they're benthic. And so these apparently lifted off of the bottom and then rose up to the surface, probably through photosynthesis, where they were producing oxygen gas bubbles, and that created buoyancy and brought them to the surface.
And so what are the environmental implications of them being there?
When you have a lot of algae of any kind, two main concerns come to mind. One would be that it can block light from reaching the bottom. So then you have concerns with seagrasses that need a lot of light. And the second concern would be that they can use up oxygen levels, especially at night. So everything is only consuming oxygen at night. And so if there's a lot of biomass, they can actually remove all of the oxygen from the water. And that's one reason why you see fish kills when you have large non-toxic algal blooms.
So we could have red tide killing fish that are feeding an algae that can remove even more water or more oxygen from the water. It sounds like there's a potential for a cycle there. Are we looking at possible dead zones like you see in some areas?
Possibly. I think in the past we've had dead zones, and we've had anything from fighting conchs to bottom fishes that have washed up on the beaches, usually like in May, early June. And those, I think, were due to low oxygen or no oxygen conditions, hypoxic conditions. And so we're now starting to deploy oxygen meters to measure oxygen levels, look at the salinity of the water, and different kinds of samplers that we have out on artificial reefs and structures, just to try to get a better sense of what these bottom waters are doing and how their chemistry and characteristics are changing over time.
I've seen reports of dead zones, like at the mouth of the Mississippi River or whatever. Is that something that we've seen here in southwest Florida waters? Is that something that is part of what happens periodically over time because of these conditions, or is this fairly unprecedented for southwest Florida?
Well, in terms of the hypoxic zones, we have not documented them, but I think they're happening. And what would cause them here that's a little bit different from the Mississippi River would be that we'll have probably bacteria and the previous wet season's organic matter that is being degraded by the bacteria. So then they're using up the oxygen as they're recycling that organic matter into nutrients.
You serve on the National Harmful Algal Bloom Committee and on the editorial board of the journal Harmful Algae. Have you ever seen a convergence of algae blooms like what we're experiencing right now, right on your doorstep, basically?
No, they've had similar events in California where they'd have cyanobacterial blooms moving down into the estuaries, and then they'd have a toxic diatom bloom offshore, driven by different factors. In this case, I think with both of the cyanobacteria blooms, it's going to be due to a lot of nutrients, maybe as far back as Hurricane Irma and the tropical disturbance before that, maybe even further back with just legacy nutrients of, you know, all the nutrient inputs we've had for decades. Red tide gets a little tricky. It's probably being fed the red tide's probably being fed by the nutrients coming from the Coosawhatchie River, but there's a salinity buffer there. Red tide cannot grow in low salinity water, so it has to be at least two parts Gulf water and one part freshwater for red tide to grow. So there's a little bit more of a disconnect between red tide and the river versus the cyanobacteria in the river.
Can nutrients in the freshwater transfer into the salt water?
They can, but it's more that they'll mix in with the salt water. So typically when we look at the salt water, the Gulf water, it's low in nutrients, very, very low. And so when you mix that with the fresh water, you're effectively diluting out the nutrients. And so if we need this two-part salt water and one-part fresh water, that means you're going to dilute the nutrients by at least two-thirds. So at most, there's going to be about one-third of the nutrients left in the water. Now, it's nothing to ignore, but that's not as big of a nutrient loading or nutrient impact as we would see with the cyanobacteria, because they can tap that full 100% of the nutrients.
Gotcha. What is the Coastal Watershed Institute doing right now in response to all this? Do you guys have some plans in place or some research being done?
Right. So there's several projects we're conducting right now. Two projects we're doing is looking at ways we can mitigate or remediate the cyanobacterial blooms. So we're looking at different technologies to remove it or disperse the blooms. We're also looking at how the toxin may move into the food webs, so into smaller fishes, moharas, anchovies, things like that, and then possibly up to higher trophic levels, larger fish. For red tide, we're looking at how they're interacting more with the bottom waters and the deeper waters, because we're seeing a lot of dead grouper. We're seeing a lot of benthic organisms washing up on the beaches. We're seeing dead grouper out on the artificial reefs. So what that means is the red tide is going into deeper waters and affecting these fishes. So why are they down in these deeper waters? And they might be tapping some of these bottom nutrients that could also be related to hypoxia like we just talked about.
Well, we'll definitely get you back on to talk about that. And one more quick question on the oscillatoria is how big and bad can this get? I mean, from the way it turns up in other environments, is this just the beginning of something possibly very big, or is this something that probably won't get much bigger?
I think that's a little bit of a hard call, because the biomass we see right now most likely lifted up off of the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so will it actually grow now that it's in the water, or is this actually more of a death phase, if you will, and that's why it's floating? So if it's growing on the bottom, you have a limited area. It's not just like the Gulf of Mexico and the red tide where it can grow anywhere. Especially I've seen most of it up in the channels and up in the bays and things like that. So you have much more limited bottom area in that sense. But if it can grow in the surface waters and tap nutrients, yes, it could grow even more. But I'm not sure. I was trying to read up on the literature on it. I'm not sure if it's typical for oscillatory to make those surface blooms like that.
Does anything eat it?
Things do eat it. Yeah, there have been studies.
Anything that might bloom?
Yeah. So anything from small little shrimp-like animals to filter-feeding animals. So it just comes down to, are there enough things eating it versus how fast it's growing in the biomass.
Gotcha. So. All right. That is all the time we have for this part of the show. Thanks to my guest, Dr. Michael Parsons, is FGCU Professor of Marine Science and Director of the Coastal Watershed Institute and Vester Field Station. Thanks for your time.
Sure. You're welcome.
Our show today was produced by Julie Glenn and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.